Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Welcome to Screen Talk. I'm Eric Cohn.
I'm Ann Thompson.
And I'm here in Cannes, and I would be pouring a glass of rosé because it's evening here to share with you, but it's actually, I think, like 9 a.m. where you are. We're very far apart.
It's more like, it's almost noon. Almost noon.
Okay. I lose track of time zones. I don't even know what time it is in Cannes because you never really sleep in these parts, as you can imagine. And
well,
it's just
been working hard. You've been working hard. So
because I'm working for two people, I know what they
eat. I wish I could be there. It's torture, believe me. So here's the thing, though. I don't feel like I missed anything with Jean Dubarry. I don't feel like that was a must-see movie or that it's necessarily going to come back, you know?
So the festival started last night, right, with a movie that made a lot of sense as an opening night film. It was a French period drama that appeals to French audiences in a kind of a commercial context. It felt to me like the kind of movie you would see doing well in the U.S. art house scene a few decades ago. There's no fancy trickery about it. This is not Marie Antoinette. Mai Wen, who directs and stars in it, you know, as the king's most famous and favorite lover, is good and has a sort of a rebellious air about her, but it never breaks the fourth wall or anything. I mean, you're watching a period piece about a romance in Versailles, and so if you're into that, it's pretty, it's well acted, and yes, Johnny Depp is in it for a little bit. But that's it.
Speaking French. So is he? Yeah. You aren't a French speaker. I wish I could tell if it was good French or not.
You know,
French speakers are pretty, you know, pretty judgmental
discerning
about American speaking. I mean, lived there a long time.
Well, obviously. I remember noticing the first time I went to Cannes, and it was like somebody, like an Indian filmmaker, addressed to the crowd in French, and everyone was like, you know, like if someone speaks English, you know, who's not a native English speaker, people don't make that sound. So there was a very specific kind of a thing. But it seemed fine. I was waiting for him to speak French at the press conference. He didn't go that far. So I don't know
he
how
showed he showed up 45 minutes late.
Yeah, I don't know. The timing seems it's like counting the standing ovations here. I heard 27 minutes and someone said 40. I came out of a screening and I thought I was going to miss this press conference, and he was just getting started. So I watched it on the monitor.
Oh, you missed 45 minutes of the press conference. Not that you cared, but
not much.
He was very outspoken about what he was going through, feeling like he was banned, being asked to leave the Fantastic Beasts project.
Yeah,
you know,
though he didn't name it. Yeah, although he also said some stuff that I still can't make sense out of about McDonald's and people watching him eating a Big Mac on a loop or something. And I don't know. I mean, I didn't know how to unpack any of that, except that, you know, he's still that kooky character that he's been for a while. And, you know, he doesn't seem to be particularly interested in trying to rev a big studio comeback like he had before the career.
It's interesting that you say that, because I went out and interviewed a bunch of people. I solicited some feedback from, you know, production executives at studios and agents and producers, all these different people in Hollywood who were surprisingly supportive of Johnny Depp's return.
Yeah, I thought that piece was interesting.
It was interesting to me. Yeah, I mean, it was
crunching
a wide swath of people. Now, they were basically saying he's not going to get his $16 million payday anymore. And he's not going to get a studio movie right now, but if he behaves and looks good and learns his lines and the word on the street is good, he could come back and
that's
have
not
a career
the,
again.
The vibe that he gave off was that he's a European now and enjoying the fact that he's now he's trying to direct a movie that's in the market that he wants to shoot in
about Modigliani. Yeah.
Right. So, I mean,
not very commercial though.
Right. But I mean, there is this sense that whatever his pace is now seems to work in that system. So I guess we'll see. And we'll also see what happens with Jean du Barry, a movie that could have some sort of very limited life. But it's not a big part of it. I mean,
you can't really sell him. And then, so you've seen some other of the competition films.
Yeah. It's just kind of getting started. So it's kind of interesting because I can't say with certainty, you know, this is the movie that's really starting to pop, but you start to hear murmurings of people who saw certain things early. And then you start to, you know, kind of get the lay of the land in terms of what has real potential. And I would say there's a handful of competition films that seem like they could really pop. And then if anything else outside of those does, it'll be a real surprise. But a film like Anatomy of a Fall with Sandra.
Yeah, the word is good on that. Although it's a 3-hour movie and it's mostly in English. It's not going to be a submission. And you and I both saw, I'm distracting you. That one is Sandra Hüller, you know, so there's
Of Tony Erdmann fame. And I know of one juror who I spoke to last night, who I think without realizing it, gave me some info because this person said, oh, I love Tony Erdmann, because we were talking about how Tony Erdmann was this great movie that didn't win the Palme d'Or. And of course, Sandra Hüller is in 2 Cannes movies. She's also in
the Jonathan Glazer film.
Jonathan Glazer's Zone of Interest, the A24 movie in competition. And that one also has a lot of really good buzz. So there's a lot of excitement there. And a lot of people who have been telling me they respect a director like Jonathan Glazer who hasn't made a lot of movies and only kind of resurfaces when he's made something he's really invested in. So there's a lot of curiosity there. And then you have Firebrand, Karim Ainu is a really interesting Brazilian director who's not super widely known in the US, but he does an English language film with Jude Law, and it's a sales
title. It's Henry VIII and everything. We call a bodice ripper. I'm curious.
People are saying it's good. I mean, is that a Palme movie, a period drama? I mean, we'll be so far removed from the Jean du Barry kind of template. We'll see how it plays. But then there's also a first film in competition called Banel and Adama, which is an African film from a filmmaker who has made shorts before, but has not, this is her first feature. And you never really know with those.
When they finally get a first-time filmmaker into the competition, it usually means that it's pretty damn good. I think Sex Lies and Videotape was one of those.
Well, there was that, but you remember Yomadine a few years ago. That was pretty good, but it didn't take off. So you don't always, sometimes there are stories behind the scenes, like what everyone's saying with this one is that originally it was in a certain regard, and then they bumped it up. Thierry Frémaux is claiming that was never true. They just used that so that there wasn't too much competition pressure when they were considering the film. There's so much horse trading going on behind the scenes. But, you know, I talked to a few people who saw this film. They said it's a very strong debut. So I'm looking forward to that. And then we have a sort of a mystery film and competition to look at, which is May December. You know, Todd Haynes makes good movies. That's a movie we should be excited about. But I can't find anybody who's had a chance to check it out.
They aren't showing it. It's a purposeful withholding of a movie. The other people, you know, have seen something because it was shown to some kind of industry screening or something. But here's and sometimes it can. It's the moderators who've seen the movie or some of the programmers. You know, this is
subtitling.
One that no one's talking about because they haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, so looking forward to that. That'll be a big thing, and a lot of people are going to have to go to that gala and have that experience for that one. There's 2 competition films I've seen already because we're now a day or so into the festival. One is Hirokazu Koreeda's new film, Monster, which is very solid, I would say. I mean, mileage will vary depending on how much you're into kind of the very subtle approach of Koreeda's storytelling.
Contemplative and quiet?
Yes, there's a structural trick to the movie. It's almost like Close from Cannes last year, you know, a story about bullying, But the kid, there's a question at the beginning, early in the movie, about whether or not this kid was actually bullied, or if he was the bully, or if something else happened. And so as the movie goes along, you start to see different perspectives on what happened to this kid and his single mother and his teacher. And so it has a mystery at the center of it, but it's still a very quiet piece of filmmaking. So, you know, you kind of have to be into that approach, but it's well done. It's very well done.
Well, I love this work. I can't wait to see it. What else did you see?
And the other one is Catherine Corsini's new film, Homecoming. So this one is another one of those Cannes controversies, because there is a lot of behind the scenes stuff that seems to have happened involving they lost some funding from the CNC because of some of the ways that they shot scenes with minors. And it's not exactly clear what happened there, if there was a sex scene with a minor that was shot or something to that effect that's not in the movie. I can't speak with authority about any of that stuff. I thought the movie was very solid, which is probably why it's showing early in the festival. There's nothing actually, they're getting it out of the way because of the controversy, but also it wouldn't be a movie that nobody would pay attention to later in the festival, because it's a very familiar kind of drama about a mother and her two teen kids. They go on vacation to Corsica. Their dad's dead and they don't know all the details about that. And they kind of have a falling out. They go out and party and meet some people, and they go through some experiences together. It's very well acted. The two young actresses, whose names are not in front of me right now, are really well done. It's a Black family. It's an interesting perspective on their experience from an identity standpoint. There's a queer component to it. It's good filmmaking. It's just, you know, it's, you're looking for things you haven't seen before when you're looking at the competition by and large.
So you saw the Almodovar, obviously.
Yes.
There was some kind of scrum yesterday where people were turned away. A lot of prominent critics and other, Janet Yang of the Academy, Justin Chang, a lot of people were turned away.
Not who you want to turn away, that's
but you
sure.
got to see it early, and you talked to Almodovar, so I highly recommend, you did a good job with that and the interview, but it sounds from David Ehrlich's review like people wish it was more, like an hour,
you know? I would have loved to see a feature-length version of Strange Way of Life. I mean, it's Pedro Almodovar or doing like his version of a Western. He's called it his response to Brokeback Mountain, but really it's sort of his response to like all Westerns through a sort of homoerotic lens, because Westerns have always been talked about as had being sort of the macho thing is homoerotic. So he just takes it one step further. And it's this very beautiful kind of tense story where Ethan Hawke and Pedro Pascal are, and it's not really a spoiler, it's established very early on, former lovers. They haven't seen each other since their earlier days. Now Ethan Hawke is a sheriff. Pedro Pascal comes back to town. Some stuff ensues. I wouldn't go past that, because it's really half an hour, right? So what it feels like is the first act of a movie. I think it's very satisfying in that sense, because it sets up a lot of possibilities for your own imagination. In fact, when I was speaking to Pedro Pascal as a supporting voice in this piece, he had a whole ending worked out for what happens to these characters. And I do think if you watch the film in that context, it's sort of like, it's just a snippet of how Pedro tells stories. He's not ready, it seems, to make a feature-length film in English, because
he's preparing one. One fell apart, the Cate Blanchett one,
right.
Which
he
wrote
wasn't
about.
Ready there. He,
and
he
then
wasn't
he said
ready
there,
there
was some other. Well, I remember when I interviewed him some years ago,
right?
There was a Meryl Streep project that fell
but
apart.
But he was going to do Sister Act 30 years
he's
ago.
Been walking up to these movies, for many years now.
But what's interesting is that so we talked, you know, a few years ago, his early COVID short film, The Human Voice with Tilda, that was his first English language project, right?
That he went through with, right?
Right. There's one person in a room. Sort of experimental. So now he's got a bigger production, like two people, bigger sets, you know, so he's expanded the lens a bit, and now maybe he's actually ready to.
But people are saying that because he went with the fashion designer, I forgot what his name is.
That's Saint Laurent.
Right. That there's a sort of who became a financier of the movie, there's a kind of commercial aspect to this, like it's a fashion piece.
the costumes are great. I mean, Saint Laurent has financed a bunch of stuff. They financed a Gaspar Noé short. They put money into the Jean-Luc Godard posthumous short film that's playing at this festival in a couple of days. So they have a whole kind of department doing that kind of stuff. And it doesn't seem like anything was compromised there. It's just a more costly project that needed that kind of partner to it. I am curious to see how Sony Pictures Classics puts it out there, because
they're going to be putting it out in the fall, Michael Barker told me.
And it makes sense. And I always wonder with short films, like when you have a bigger name and name actors, if that helps or hurts in an awards context. But Pedro Pascal is so popular right now, right? The internet just loves him. So I think there's something really interesting about him sliding into this artier thing in between Mandalorian and Last of Us.
Yep, somebody, I think it may have been David, suggested that this was a more, you know, audience friendly kind of starry role in a way, given the darker side that he plays in The Last of Us.
Yeah, it's a very, yeah, exactly. He's playing a sort of in Last of Us. He's you know, this very
tortured,
damaged, traumatized, right? And here, I mean, he's still sort of, there's a sad element to the character, but there's also, you know, erotic chemistry with Ethan Hawke.
Can't wait. I'm in. Yeah. I'm in. But and then you interviewed Steve McQueen, the filmmaker from Britain, who has this Amsterdam documentary, which our critic David pretty much panned and said, shouldn't have been. Isn't worth the hours that are put into it.
And he wasn't alone. And it doesn't surprise me in the least, because when you describe this movie to people, most of them are not even going to try it. I mean, it's 4.5 hours, a little over 2 hours with an intermission in the middle, and then another 2 hours of contemporary footage across the city of Amsterdam with a dry voiceover explaining essentially different things that happened during the Nazi occupation of Amsterdam. So I guess like Shoah, there's no archival, but unlike Shoah, you don't have any conflict. You know, there's no confrontation with Nazis or anything like that. The voiceover comes from Steve McQueen's wife's book about Nazi occupation of Amsterdam. She previously did a documentary called 3 Minutes of Lengthening that was another,
I saw that. Yeah.
So there's a connection there that's kind of fascinating. It's, of course, it's a really hard sit. It's a really fascinating art project. I find Steve McQueen to be one of the most remarkable kind of film artists, because his aesthetic applies equally well to the gallery space. If you look at some of the work that he's done that are like video installations, that are like really meditations on geography and the history it brings to it. So he's studied the Statue of Liberty, and he studied Grenfell and the tragedy that happened there with the building fire a few years ago. So this film is in line with that. What he told me was that originally he was going to project contemporary footage over earlier footage from the period that's being described, and it would have been a gallery work. Somehow it became this thing that was upgraded to a feature film context. And I think that the power of the piece probably would have been restored if it had stayed in the gallery context.
Sounds like it.
And come and go. But it's an interesting kind of a challenge. So I don't know exactly how A24 is releasing it in theaters. That's another stage in all this. So we'll see how all that unfolds. But
I actually got to see a couple things. I saw this animated feature called Robot Dreams, which was beautiful and heartfelt and entertaining and minor, slight, a little bit small. But I really enjoyed it, and I'll be curious to see how that goes over.
I happen to see it gets picked up.
If it gets picked up, it could be an animated feature container. Yeah. But what did you think?
I liked it a lot. It's a good New York movie. I mean, it has very specific New York
period. Another 80s movie, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's got like a Kim's Video reference and El Quijote.
A lot of music. A lot of 80s music.
And the locations are all really well created. I mean, from a craft standpoint, it's interesting to think about from an animation standpoint how they recreated New York in this 2D animation style. But I like it also because there's a kind of simplicity to it. You know, it's anthropomorphized New York and a dog who essentially falls in love with a robot partner, right?
Who gets a band. He loses him for various reasons that you have.
And that director made that film Blanca Nieves a couple of years ago that was an Oscar submission from Spain. You know, very different, but also, you know, visually oriented. So it's always fascinating when you have a live action director go to animation. You know, this isn't Guillermo doing Pinocchio. It's a very different.
Although it is an adult. It's more of an adult. I was thinking about this. It's not it isn't geared to kids. It isn't looking to entertain children. So it is more
a little
of an
sad.
Yeah, no, sad. It's
but got it could emotions. Have a good life. Definitely. I mean, and there are buyers looking at it here.
So. And then there's The Delinquents, which is a 3-hour Argentinian, likely, I would suggest, Oscar submission.
A lot of Argentinian films. A lot of 3-hour films, not as many Argentinian films.
It pushed my patience, Eric, at the length. I mean, it's good movie making, good story. It's a fascinating unveiling of different aspects of this theft that occurs at the beginning, and this one guy goes to prison, but he's got a collaborator on the outside who still works at the bank where he stole the money, and that guy is still harboring cash and in anticipation of his release from prison. But there's a lot of other stuff going on.
Yeah, I'm laughing because it's like you're trying to summarize this plot, and it's like, yeah, that happens in the first 20 something minutes, and then there's some other weird complications. I liked it a lot more than you, because what I thought was interesting about it is that the first, let's say, hour or so is kind of like almost like a Coen Brothers crime gone wrong kind of a thing. And then you expect, usually
it isn't like it's funny thing, though. It's not like you're laughing.
I laughed a few times, but it's not an immediate laugh. There's a moment.
It's not like you're necessarily liking and engaged by these characters. I'm not saying that's something that's required, but
I had empathy for one of them.
I'm not so sure. Yeah.
But I would say that what the length does is that as you have more distance from the stakes of this thing, that the characters do too, and they realize over time how stupid the overall concept of this heist is. When people are chasing these lofty goals, I'm going to get a bunch of money and be rich and then be set for life, and then as you get distance from these ideas, they're not as gratifying.
It's interesting in a sort of treasure of the Sierra Madre kind of way, in terms of what it does to them, how it changes them,
greed.
What this one act does to move them to a different place. I mean, one guy's marriage is challenged and so on.
Totally. And so that's Magnolia is handling international on that. So it'll be interesting to see if somebody actually comes in and picks that up here or what will happen.
I suspect that will depend on whether Argentina deposits an Oscar submission.
Right. Right. So we see a lot.
But there's other Argentinian films in play too, right?
Yeah, there will be. There will be, absolutely. And there's an Argentinian on the jury at Cannes this year, Damien Cifrone, who I saw last night, and he told me is working on a sequel to his great Cannes hit Wild Tales.
Oh, that's fantastic news. That's one of my favorites.
Yeah.
Real audience pleaser. Really talk about comedy.
Yeah, I was going to say you should call it Wilder Tales and just upping the ante or something like that. There's a lot of stuff around the corner. So, it's hard to really, we could fill a half an hour talking about everything that's happened in the last 48 hours here. But the next week, who knows? I mean, maybe Asteroid City, also in competition, ends up being a huge hit. It's been a while since a Wes Anderson film really resonated here. It's very unpredictable.
And Killers of the Flower Moon.
Flower Moon will be over the weekend, so that's going to be a lot of noise. And Indiana Jones is right around the corner, so it's like it's a lot to look forward to.
So the other thing to look forward to is your live edition of Screen Talk. So what are the circumstances? When is that going to be? Is that you and David?
Yeah. So sad to miss
the American Pavilion,
but. Yeah, but we will be at the American Pavilion on Tuesday at 2:30 p.m. So if anybody's listening who's at Cannes, they should definitely come on by or let us know what you want us to talk about. Because again, another really interesting moment of the festival, we've had this experience over the years where it's like we end up talking about what's going to win the Palm and then something shows the next day. Or I think it was like the year that I, Daniel Blake, played like the day after we did our podcast or something like that, so it's
one of those calls that I made correctly and you did not, remind you.
Well, let's see what happens this year. The prediction.
There are actors on this jury. Actors are always the ones who go with emotion.
There's actor directors too. So that's an interesting blend. We'll
actors are all actors, always actors. I mean, I always say that about Quentin Tarantino. He's an actor, whether he's a director or not. It's in your DNA.
Interesting. Interesting. Well, to be continued on that front. And you are missed, but I know you're catching some more stuff soon. So we'll regroup and unpack Can in the next couple of weeks. See you soon.
You got it. Have fun. Get some sleep.
I'll try.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.